Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where today we welcome our first hat-trick guest. He's been on twice before and he always has a lot to say, particularly on the subject of crypto, which is certainly a very hot topic in these times. His company Coincilium are also putting on a webinar in the next week on what's next for crypto post-COVID world and the crypto market insights with leading industry experts, which I think will be a very good event to tune into. Hello again, Malcolm. How are you?
Hi, Mark. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Yes, very well. Thank you. Very well. And Kenny, how are you?
Yes, I'm all right. All good. Up in Scotland.
Good. Excellent. Okay. So, Malcolm, what's new in the world of crypto then?
Although I don't think it was much more than a couple of weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago since we spoke, but it's moved very fast since then. Things are really sort of gathering pace, and it's mostly driven by the same kind of factors that really are driving interest in gold and precious metals at the moment. It's the pandemic. It's the sort of clarity about the scale of the fallout from the pandemic, and also the impact on the economy globally. There's so many unknowns and so much uncertainty. And in times of uncertainty historically, and times of crises, there was always, it's been a rush to gold. But now, of course, that we've got crypto, which sets itself up as digital gold, particularly Bitcoin, then you've got an option for people to consider. And that's really what's been driving the price of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why we thought it was a very good time for us to just put this webinar on. It's not completely altruistic in terms of actually educating people, but it is an important factor. We also, as a company, Coincilium, our share price has historically tracked the price of Bitcoin. Not without reason. I mean, we are, our focus is usually sort of specifically on the technology. We don't speculate, on the price of Bitcoin as a company, but ultimately it is the technology behind Bitcoin which is what's attractive, not just Bitcoin, but other blockchains as well, because Bitcoin itself is two things. Bitcoin is a blockchain, and Bitcoin is also a currency. But they all function within the same banner. So I think it's the small b is the blockchain and the big B is the currency. But Bitcoin is its own ecosystem and its own blockchain. So it was the first ever blockchain. So what happens when the price of Bitcoin or when the Bitcoin price environment becomes, it starts to thrive is that it very quickly starts feeding through to investor interest in our stock. We tried sort of a little bit in vain to say, well, we're a technology company, because conscious of the fact when the price goes up, we get interest. When the price goes down, some people lose interest. So we want to make sure that we can differentiate ourselves. But equally, without question, when the price climate is good for crypto, it's great for us because the fallout from that, or the spin-off, should I say, and the dividend is that there's a lot of money piles into the sector. So what tends to happen is we get opportunities. And a lot of clients who are now sitting in a position where they've got funds coming in because the trading platforms are working better or working actively. The startups that are building wallets and various other applications are starting to get demand for their services. People building pairs. There's likewise a lot of commentary. So there's a lot of activity and there is a meaningful connection. So the reason, as I said, those are the reasons why we're putting on this event. But the most important thing on the educational side is that most people, sort of mainstream investors, have flirted with Bitcoin. There are a few, ways of getting access to buying it, but there's a lot of people who still sort of feel a little bit alienated. It's not always the most straightforward thing. Yeah. I remember our first call we did, Kenny, when I asked you why you didn't own any Bitcoin. I'm not sure if you'll thank me for when I suggested you at least buy some and follow it, but you can see the difference between, you know, the way you view it before you owned any to the way you view it now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, timing sucked, so it did. And, you know, when I bought it, you know, it crashed, but it's now back up at the levels where I bought. So it's, you know, I'm really comfortable with it. Obviously, I own some XRP as well, which has done really well. So I'm starting to dabble a bit and do a bit of research and get involved. I mean, I'm still doing it through my Revolut card that I'm not really going any deeper on that at the moment. I think that's deep enough for me at the moment.
It's only because it's a new sort of novel thing, isn't it? That and people don't understand, and you can fully understand that. And I think this webinar that you've got planned, Malcolm, will definitely be well worth tuning into. I saw earlier today, just a couple of hours ago, actually, I think something that you retweeted on Twitter. It's a picture of Peter Schiff from 2012, and then a picture of him in 2020, and obviously you can see he's aged a bit. But the real funny thing underneath was you've got the price of Bitcoin in 2012 and the price of gold in 2012 compared to then the price in 2020, and you've got Bitcoin at $1 in 2012 and Bitcoin at $9,000 in 2020, whereas gold at $1,700, and it's still $1,700 today. I think, you know, that was quite powerful. It made me smile when I saw that, because I do like Peter Schiff. I do watch his videos. He's very outspoken when it comes to gold and how bullish he is on gold. But, you know, it did make me smile, and I think people just need to perhaps understand a little bit more about crypto, how to buy it and just make that first purchase, and then, you know, they'll feel more comfortable, like Kenny did, you know. So I think it's good you're putting this on. So when is it going on, and how can people register?
Yeah, it's on the 7th of May, which is next Thursday at 2:30 p.m. British summer time, and it's on Zoom. So you have to register, and if you go to our, I mean, maybe you want to tweet this out afterwards, but it's on our Twitter feed, the link to the Eventbrite registration. What would happen is you'll just, you don't have to fill in too much detail, just a name, email address, and that's it, really. Then the day of the conference, we will email you the link to the Zoom page, and then you just literally click on that and the conference starts, and you don't need to do anything else other than sort of let it run. It's an hour long, the panel sessions. We've got four. I will be moderating the panel. We've got four panelists. We've got Eddie, our CEO, who's, you know, he's got great focus on this. He's been in the sector since 2013. And we've got Dave Chapman from BC Group. Now, they're a very large trading facility based in Asia. They're one of the largest in Asia. So he's got very good insight on the pricing side of things and what he's expecting. You know, we're looking forward to hearing what he has to say. We've got Santiago, who Santi works with IOV Labs, which is one of the companies that is doing tremendously well out of this this boom. They are, you know, the first, Coincilium was the first investor in IOV Labs, and I'm also now a director of IOV. But they are one of our sort of stars in our portfolio. So they're you know, doing really well. And he's Santi's a sort of an algo trader. He really understands the stuff that, you know, makes my brain bleed if I think about it, and how you sort of set up these programs to trade things. So he's got, you know, insight there. These, by the way, all these guys speak very sort of accessible English. They're not going to be talking technically. That was the whole idea about this. We want sort of to get their, not just their insights on sort of where the price is going, but also, you know, why it behaves like it does, and why they think. We're also going to get price targets from them. And finally, Pavel Steno is co-founder of a private fund, a crypto fund. Very unique to have actually a fund that is purely cryptocurrency. And they are in Gibraltar, where I am. So I sort of know him from here. He's previously COO of Poker Strategy. So he's a You know, he's, I don't think he's a professional gambler in the sense that he makes his money from gambling, but he knows about risk. And he's also got a lot of insight he's been giving us on actually, you know, why the price moves, when it does, how it does. And so we've got a lot of knowledge there, which is going to be imparted. And it's really a really good thing for people to actually tap into, and not to be too concerned if you know, you've not really been exposed to Bitcoin before. Okay. This won't be talking over your head. We won't be talking about things that people won't understand. I'll be asking questions in a very layman-like fashion. So we just want to sort of get people a little bit familiar, and also to get them to realize, to get investors to realize that there's a whole sector out there that is growing. And, you know, a little bit like the internet, you don't want to be left behind. You know, eventually you're going to have to plug into these things. Mm. And I've got a friend who spent age, didn't want to learn how to use his computer or a computer, didn't want to send email. And then, you know, eventually he got, you know, after years of his company insisting that he does this, he had to go up this really steep learning curve. Mm. And a lot of people are like that. They don't, you know, I've always been an early adopter. So I'm one of these geeks who gets fascinated by these things, but I know a lot of people aren't. But now's the time to actually dip your toe in the water, to actually start learning a little bit about it. Mm. Doesn't mean you have to go out and buy Bitcoin straight away. You know, we're not giving investment advice. We're talking about what's going on here. So, and you know, with a lot of people that are cynical. Now, another one you mentioned, Peter Schiff, extremely cynical about Bitcoin. I'm quite surprised actually with that, because I got into Bitcoin through gold. I was always a gold investor. Yeah. And I've done quite well out of gold and gold mining stocks as well. And I get it for the fundamental reasons. And I used to listen to Peter Schiff, and his economic arguments are really powerful. He's a very charismatic guy, and he gets it. He understands why, you know, everything he says is going to happen happens, and he likes to tell people that as well. So, you know, he's very much a sort of a charismatic kind of speaker. Mm. But what I think the main issue with him and Bitcoin is that he can't really make any money out of Bitcoin, and he sees people buying gold. Buying Bitcoin as customers that would have bought gold. Yeah. So it's a very hard thing for him to square that circle. And that's my opinion. It might be that he's pathologically kind of really hates Bitcoin for other reasons. I don't know, but he's certainly very vocal. And I think the other thing is, of course, when he starts talking about it, he gets loads and loads of followers. Mm. So it's, you know, it's one of these things a little bit like, I suppose, Piers Morgan effect. You know, a lot of people love to hate him, and you know, he does get a lot of people following him. But the performance of gold, yeah, I think you picked a moment in time there. You know, at that moment in 2012, it did hit 1700 and then it fell back. But you know, you can't argue with the fact that Bitcoin's performed as the best investment in the history of mankind. So, you know, and I don't think it's over yet, not by a long shot. And this is one of the things I think we're going to hopefully be able to demonstrate when people, you know, if they come along, please feel free to register. Be great to have them. More the merrier. We'll be looking at doing polls as well, and there'll be a Q&A as well. So you'll be able to sort of type in your questions to ask the panel as well.
Yep. I suppose the most important question, Malcolm, is there going to be any food and drink available?
Yes, as much as you want. As much as you can provide. But I've got to warn you, Kenny, if you get a bit rowdy, we might have to kick you out.
Yeah, okay, no worries. Yeah.
I remember the Mining Maven event you always put on, Malcolm. The food was always well served. It was always good catering at those events. So yeah, we expect no less on the virtual one.
Virtual sausage and mash.
Exactly.
How's that going to work? That would be great, wouldn't it? I think when we did those Mining Maven events, the only issue was the last presenter really had the short straw, because you know, everyone by that stage was so hungry and thirsty.
Yeah,
they were just get on with it. So we'll have to, hopefully when this lockdown finishes, I look forward to hopefully revisiting some of those things, if not Mining Maven, certainly bringing Coincilium to a to a live audience. And, you know, no reason, you know, we wouldn't, I'm still involved with Mining Maven, as you know, although it's not my day job, but I'd love to see those events kick off again in London or regionally, wherever. And, you know, very happy to support that as well.
Just when you're talking about the Bitcoin price, and Malcolm, yeah. there's an article in Forbes.com, and it's there's four guys that have gave three-year price predictions. Have you seen this article? So the first one is Tim Draper said it'll be $250,000
in three years.
There's a guy called Preston Pish. You heard of him?
Yeah, I have.
He says $300,000. Mm-hmm. There's a Goldman Sachs hedge fund manager says $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
The best one is Ross Ulbricht, but I think was the Silk Road founder. $333 million per Bitcoin.
$333 million per Bitcoin.
Yes, that's. Send you that. I'll send you the link to that article, but it caught my eye.
I think we saw something on that, and I think I shared it. I tweeted it. I didn't see Ross Ulbricht. Well, I mean, look, there's two sides to every prediction. Is, you know, if you're looking at it in terms of dollars, you've got to look at what you think the dollar's going to be worth in 3 years' time. Yeah. And with all this kind of quantitative easing going on, it's very likely that we're going to see some inflation. What degree of inflation? Mm. We're going to see, I don't know. But one thing's for sure, if it does hit, then there are, you know, a few hard assets that are going to offer a hedge against it. So I think that from the supply side, Bitcoin is in a very interesting position, because when you compare the dynamics with gold on the supply side, you know, there's always new discoveries of gold. Not many, you know, there is that relative scarcity, and but when you do get a new discovery, it does add the you know, to the overall supply. And I'm still, you know, completely confident and investing in gold and gold stocks. I don't see that physical tangibility of it going away. But the interesting thing about Bitcoin is the size of the entire market of all the Bitcoin that's out there, and the value of that compared to the value and size of all the gold in the world. And I think that the total value of all gold is something, or the gold market overall is $8 trillion. And the total value of all Bitcoin that exists based on the current price and the known supply, because that supply is absolutely transparently known. There's only, right at this moment, 18,353,900 Bitcoin in existence. And there will only ever be 21 million. And that will be by the year 2145. So right now, the entire market cap of all the Bitcoin that exists is 162,517,690 dollars. So when you compare that with an $8 trillion market and a 162 billion market, you can see the disparity there. And that's why these people are suggesting that Once more people adopt Bitcoin, more people become trusting of it, and they sort of have more perhaps developed ways of buying it. You know, wallets become easier to use. Revolut, you know, grows their holding, and then other banks start offering their clients the ability to own it. And that, this is coming. That's when you'll start seeing more adoption, more demand pressure on this very, very tight supply. And if you saw Bitcoin go up 10 times from here, that would be a market cap of 1.6 trillion, which is still less than, you know, a sixth, or just over a sixth or something, of Bitcoin's, of the gold market. So it's still, you know, even 10 times from here, it's still less. And of course, if gold goes up to 10,000 from here, which a lot of gold bugs will say it will, then that market of 8 trillion multiplies effectively almost 5 times, and it becomes a 40 trillion market. So you can start seeing why the rationale behind all these calls. So I'm not going to make a call now, but I will say that at our webinar, we will be asking people to make a call, and I'll probably reveal my call there. But I think that what I'd like to see happen is us to break first through $10,000, because there's a technical kind of resistance level there that is sort of a lot of the people who I follow who've been trading Bitcoin for, you know, a long time, they're pretty good at it and they know what they're doing, are looking at that as a serious resistance around that level. But if we get through there, then it's not that hard for it to get to 20,000 or start moving up towards the previous highs of 20,000. And if it starts moving through there, then that's really when all bets are off, because it's either going to bounce back and then just, you know, crash down, or it's going to slice through like a knife, and then you're in uncharted territory, and that's where you start sort of finding a new place. But I have to say that, you know, what's driving all this is not, you know, just blatant speculation. It is against a backdrop of a very, very serious economic crisis that the world is facing, and Bitcoin has really got to win its spurs as a store of value, which it sort of lost on the 12th of March, Black Thursday, when it crashed to 3,800. And that there are reasons for that, which are becoming apparent. But the fact that it's recovering now suggests that it got knocked down, but it got up again. Yeah. In the words of that wonderful song.
That song, yeah.
Chumbawamba.
Yeah. There's definitely, I've seen a few posts on Twitter about it as well. There's almost a fear of missing out type event coming up as well, just with general investors. They don't want to miss the boat. So the volumes in the last couple of days as well in Bitcoin have been tremendous, which has obviously increased the volatility.
But that happens across the board. Our share price went in March 2016 was at a penny when we did the first fundraising then, and it in the peak in 2017 hit 27 pence. So, you know, this is kind of these leverage plays that you know, that's the kind of stuff that can happen once the market, you know, gets on fire. Now, you know, I think it could happen. I think it is happening in terms of the overall market sentiment, but we've just got to get people to sort of follow what's going on and just sort of see that Bitcoin has actually got legs.
Yeah, and obviously this Bitcoin halving is coming up. Was it maybe a week away or something?
Well, it's actually, it looks like it's going to be the 12th of May. It's not actually set on a day. There's not a date in the calendar. It's actually it's a trigger when the amount of transactions hits a certain, I've forgotten the actual number, but it's a number of transactions. And because the new blocks are formed every 10 minutes or so, and that's not sort of set in stone. So it can vary, but it looks like it's going to be on or around about the 12th of May. And that means that the supply of new Bitcoin coming to which will be available for miners, is going to halve. So it started off when Bitcoin first launched, there were 50 new Bitcoin created every 10 minutes. And after every 4 years, it halves. So it went down in 2012 to 25, 2016, 12 and a half. And in 2020, in May, it'll go down to 6.25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. So this increases the competition between miners. I think the most impacted are going to be the miners who are mining Bitcoin. They often mine other cryptos as well, but the whole economic supply dynamics of new Bitcoins hitting the market is going to change, and that's going to be sort of a bit of an arms race. It always is in terms of processing power for these guys, but it doesn't mean all the Bitcoin out there halves. It means the new supply halves. So it's a little bit like, you know, a mine that's getting older and its supply of gold is depleting. It's the same kind of thing.
So it becomes harder to mine.
I don't want to get too technical, because it's not actually that the difficulty levels are actually more flexible than that. It depends on the activity on the network. Sometimes, and this is an area I'm not completely sure of, but it's not that it becomes the difficulty levels of mining can fluctuate during all the time. But the actual amount of Bitcoin that are out there to be mined is set in stone.
Okay.
So there's only going to be, 6.25 Bitcoins available. And these miners have to perform sort of these complicated algorithms to be rewarded with these Bitcoins. And they, in the process of performing these calculations, they're also protecting the network from attack. So it's a very elegant kind of process, but it is very effective, and the miners get rewarded for doing this. But as I say, with less rewards out there, puts more stress on the supply side. So it should it historically has proven to actually increase the amount of increase the price, because it did. In this was the precursor in 2016, when the halving happened in 2016. The price went from the beginning of December 2017. The Bitcoin price was $1,000, by the end of the year, by the peak, it was just under 20,000. So.
Yeah.
And that corresponded. I actually misspoke before. We did our fundraising a penny in 2017, and by the end of that same year, it was the price of our shares was 27 pence. So it got caught up in that whole hype, and it sort of went crazy. I think, you know, it certainly looks like it's building ahead of steam. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, I've actually got a graph in front of me, Malcolm. And the 2012 halving, a year after that, Bitcoin went up 8,000%. And then in the same event in 2016, a year later, it went up 284%.
Yeah.
So I know it's only been two halvings before, but certainly seems to... The graph points to it's going up after it, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I think that, and on top of the, you know, all the other aspects and all the other factors, plus there's a lot of people that are starting to, you know, large funds are starting to look more closely at Bitcoin as well. So you might have that sort of sweet spot where increased demand meets the constrained supply with a economic background that actually is conducive for it, and we'll see. I think, you know, everything changes, and then of course you've got that, as you say, that fear of missing out, but the most important thing for any contrarian investor is to sort of get their position beforehand and sweat it out. I mean, it doesn't always work, but you know, that's what, you know, these kind of speculative things are all about. And by the way, none of this is investment advice.
good stuff, Mark. I've been doing a lot of talking. You were trying to get in a couple of times. I'll let you have the floor if you want.
No, I'm all right. No, we've covered a lot. I'm actually quite looking forward. I've just registered on my phone for the event.
Thank you. Great.
And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. So
I'm going to send you a link so that you can tweet this out to your listeners.
Sure.
Did you fill in the questionnaire?
I did.
Okay, so what did you say you were?
Private
investor.
Say
you worked. Okay, you didn't say you worked for the Federal Reserve, did you?
No, I didn't. No, I just said I was a private investor.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Brilliant. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to plug this event. And say, hopefully, if it appeals to your listeners, I'll be delighted to if they would like to register and come along.
Yeah. Great.
Virtual sausage and mash. Well, it's lunchtime, so I don't know what we're going to do. Maybe virtual sandwiches or something. I don't know. Virtual, but I think get yourself a glass of wine. And sit there.
Probably is best, isn't it? Yeah, get yourself sorted, then you're okay, aren't you?
Yeah.
Great. I'm trying to remember the what was the advert, Malcolm? You'll remember it probably from the early 80s. I think it was a brand of beer, and it was never too early for a. What was the brand of beer? Was it Caliber or a Kestrel or something? I can't remember
that either.
Yeah, well, it's never too early for a beer, so I have to. Yeah, I'll have a beer in my hand.
It wasn't a McEwan's, was it?
No. I'll need to Google it once we're finished this podcast, but I can see the advert and I can. That's annoying.
It's a typical Scotsman, never too early for a beer.
Yeah. Great. I just remember the Watney's Red Barrel advert.
Oh, that's before my time, Malcolm.
Yeah, before everyone's time.
Yeah. Anyway, good stuff. Right, well, thanks for your time tonight, Malcolm.
Pleasure. Well, thank you very
actually,
much.
Probably
a record, this one, isn't it?
Yeah. We're on 32 minutes, yeah. So, on that note, I think, we can say goodnight, I think, can we?
Okay. Yeah, well, we've actually continued our globe-trotting theme, because last week we were in Israel, Abu Dhabi, Ireland, England, and then this week we started in Florida, and now we're in Gibraltar. So this podcast gets around the world. So it does.
It does. That's great.
Yeah. Great. So we'll start to tick off the countries. We'll try and get to maybe 50 countries before the end of the year. That would be a good challenge. So it would.
It would. It's amazing. I think you're going great guns, and you're doing a great job. I love the, as I said to you, I love the format, and it makes your guests feel very relaxed. So we can talk a lot more.
Great.
Anyway,
good stuff.
Thanks,
Malcolm.
Thanks very much. That's
Cheers.
Great. Okay.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Join us next time, where we'll be talking property with Ben Habib, who is the Group Chief Executive of First Property Group. Tune in next time.